This is Amateur Logic, episode 207, for July 18th, 2025. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. Keep the fun going with one of ICOM's go-to rigs. As the days get longer and the bands heat up, make sure you're ready with a radio that works as hard as you do. So kick back and enjoy the breeze and make those QSOs with ease. Good evening. Welcome to another action-packed episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Tommy.
Emil.
And I'm Mike.
And we've got a fun show tonight. Not that they aren't all fun, but this one has field day fun in it.
Yeah, it was a fun field day.
It was. And Mike's got a special segment for us as well. I don't know if he encountered this in the process or not.
I didn't. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that BSOD error in a long time.
Yeah. I didn't see it. I was going through the closet tonight to see what was in there, and this is, I haven't worn this one.
That crashed on out at you?
Yep. Kind of crashed at me. I couldn't reach the reset button quick enough.
Does it offer general protection from faults?
It does. PRN list current.
PFN.
PFN.
Corrupt.
PFN. Those are before those are before the days of protected memory, isn't it?
I don't know. No. This one's...
Beginning dump of physical memory.
Yeah.
Physical memory dump complete.
That explains a lot. You know it? Tommy, what's been going on?
Trying to stay cool, man.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, it was especially tough at field day, too. Although, I don't want to spoil all the field day fun, but it was pretty hot during the setup part.
As usual.
Yeah.
Didn't rain at all this year, though, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
Not up here. Email, what's been going on down there?
Besides recovering from field day and the heat and the humidity, me and Glenn, who's in the chat room tonight, been racking up some simulated emergency test time with the different agencies, plus the there was one recently with the Shares group that we were doing an exercise with for an earthquake, a simulated earthquake up above you guys, north of you guys in Tennessee. So lots of practicing going on.
Mike, what's going on to the north up there? Is the snow off the ground yet?
Yeah, very much so. In fact, we've been getting some heat waves here, too. Temperatures reaching the 90s, and of course, over the 90s when you account for the humidex factor. So, yeah, it's been a crazy year. It's been a hot summer so far.
What was that term you used, humidex?
Yes. Or the feel-like temperature.
It's kind of like the heat index.
Or the humidure.
Some, whatever that is.
That was the term they were using in Fort Myers when I lived down there.
Oh, yeah?
Before they started announcing that sort of kind of early on, and that's what the guy called it, the humidure. Anyway... What's been going on here? It has been hot. I have, I was in the swamp yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Did you take your hoe?
No, the hoe was still there.
Okay.
Right where I left it. In the swamp.
Did you have to exercise your hoe?
No, I had to move it out of the way, though. It was, okay. Yeah. But I looked behind the door to make sure there was no snakes. When I walked in.
I've been curious. It might be easier if you were to give that hoe a name.
Betsy? I don't know. Yeah.
I thought we did that already. Something of the snake killing kind.
Yeah. Well, true. Yeah. That was just a general description there. Open the door to the building. And the main air conditioner had quit. So with a 50-kilowatt transmitter, it gets a little toasty in there.
Wow.
In 190-something degree weather, too?
in 90-something degree weather, too, and it's a Canadian transmitter. And you would think it couldn't operate under such conditions, but...
But you know what? I bet you it's because it's a dry heat.
No, it wasn't a dry heat in the
There's
swamp.
There's nothing dry around
no,
there,
trust
man.
Me. And to top that off, I walked over, you know, checked the fuel, 1,000-gallon fuel tank for the generator. It was 35%, so okay, I'm going to have to order some fuel. I went over to test the generator, and, you know, it's big as a car, bigger engine than a typical car is a 10-cylinder.
Wow.
Reached in and hit it, went clunk.
Battery?
Clunk, yeah.
Battery dead.
Battery dead. Battery's 7 months old.
Wow.
The charger's working.
The heat must have got it.
It must have. Yep. I don't know what got it. It's the second one. I just had to replace one in December.
Wow.
Because the one I had bought before that had gone out under warranty. This one did, too. I took it back today and got another one
free. Good thing you didn't have any power failure.
At least I didn't have to work on a transmitter this time. It was all...
That's how you know them Canadians make a good one.
You know, that transmitter is 25 years old now. It's a 50-kilowatt solid state. And we've only ever had... It's got like 10 power modules in it. That all sums up to be... it's actually 60 kilowatts, but 50 is what we're licensed for, and that's the most you can get in the U.S. these days. We finally had a module fail 6 months back. First one in 25 years. So, yeah, it's been a good transmitter. We've had a few minor problems, but that's the first thing. And it's not the RF devices that failed. It's a controller board that's in it.
Yeah. Yeah, a news item this time. I thought it was kind of cool. I actually updated mine after I saw this. Raspberry Pi Connect's out of beta. Simple remote access, now even better. They've finally got it out of beta test, and the latest update, smarter wake-ups, more data-efficient connections, added some compression to it, heartbeat stuff supposedly faster. Actually, it's easy to update. There's some commands right here on the article. The link to that will be on the show notes if you want to go check it out. Anyway, it's easy to update. I updated mine. I can't really tell it's much faster, but I'm usually running mine from local in there in the network.
So you're not really going out over the net?
Not right now. I haven't really been anywhere since I updated it. But supposedly it's a little faster. So.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. But anyway, I thought it's kind of cool. It's good news. With a lack of a decent VNC option, so basically kind of stuck to using it. I like it. It's okay. It's just not quite as fast as I'd like it.
No, it's particularly if you go out and use their service over the internet, it is a fair amount slower. Although it's not bad. I'm not sure. During the beta, they only had one server for the thing, and it was in the UK, so I don't know if they've got more around the world now or not.
No,
but
no.
It always worked.
To trace route it and see.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good news, Tommy. I updated mine as well after learning that from you.
Pretty cool.
Well, what do you say we get on into the festivities here?
All right.
There he is.
The bugs crawling on the camera lens. That's my potato cannon.
Look out, Thomas Jr.
Yeah, he won't help me with that anymore. But I was using a slingshot in all fairness when he helped me.
Yeah.
We had bad technique. But
this method usually works a lot better than the
It actually is not
others.
Too bad.
Yeah.
As long as you got enough room for it. But we cast it across there. We missed the first time. That was the second cast. My aim was off a little bit this year.
Yeah. You'll notice, though, I did walk out of the way when you were throwing that.
I noticed that.
Ducked kinda, and covered.
A little bit shy.
You were
talking to Thomas?
I've heard the stories, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, it's I must serious. Comment on your nice lush green lawn there with not a single weed.
He
must have been talking to Cousin Jerry. on how to poison your lawn to get it that green with no weeds.
Yeah. Well, if you'll notice, all the weeds are sort of behind Tommy. That's the part that we bush.
Oh, that's the part you go, yeah, it's wild, right?
Yeah. We strung up one antenna. We had another antenna that's a familiar one. It's a little hard to put up, though.
We had a little malfunction on this one. The antennas didn't go up quite as easy this time as they normally do.
No. I think it was the lift motor and probably the leveling device as well.
You mean the Armstrong lift motor?
Yeah. You see how it's kind of leaning there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's leaning a good bit.
We don't have video of it leaning the other way when it actually fell on top of the house.
You know what? I'm having flashbacks of the Red Green Show when,
yeah,
in the speed with the speed increase.
Yeah, I was, you know, really in a hurry to get this done before dark. The trick to pulling this off with only two people is you've got to loop your guy ropes around something out at the ends, and bring them all together so one guy can stand there and pull all three ropes. And kind of keep the fiberglass mast straight at all times, because it does not want to go up straight. And you got an antenna that heavy.
It does not at all.
No.
The other key is don't extend the smallest part of the
no, never do mast. That. So we got the cobweb up. We didn't really have but three antennas this year, which that was enough.
So we had three transmitters.
Yeah, I had three transmitters, so we do have a little. Go ahead, Emil.
Technically, the cobweb is multiple antennas in one, right?
Well, that is correct.
And you're going to see the effects of when it fell.
Oh, yeah.
To the top.
Yeah.
It's pretty crooked.
Yeah, it's not exactly straight on the pole anymore. Or we could have straightened it back up. We didn't know.
I didn't notice it. See it leaning?
Yeah. Not till we walked back and looked at it.
That's when it landed on the roof of the house, kind of laid there. We picked it back up.
Yeah.
I thought y'all adjusted the takeoff angle perfectly.
Well.
Yeah, what do they call it? Down tilt on antenna specs?
Yeah. Yeah, you made your own hill. That's right. So it goes.
Yeah. There's the off-center fed dipole hung by a. That's some good rope, man. That's the stuff I bought down at Slidell, I think.
Yeah, I was going to buy some last time when I went to Slidell.
What's on top of it? The center conductor.
The center conductor? That's a. Yeah, well, it's a messenger cable, is I guess what you would technically call it. But it's a piece of that nylon rope or whatever it is. Military surplus stuff. You see it a lot of the ham fest. I bought a 3,000-foot roll of that at Slidell.
Might as well use it.
Yeah. And because I used lamp cord to make the dipole out of, and it would not have stretched out between those trees and got that taunt. But this has worked out good, running a little rope over the top to support the wire. And then we got one other antenna. There it is. And this is the one we used last year for digital. We used it again this year. Emil will recognize this one, I'm sure.
The Glentana.
The Glentana.
Yeah.
There you go, Glenn.
You know, you bragged about how well that thing worked. We're going to have to tune it. We kind of threatened to tune it this year, but didn't. I don't think it works as good as it should, but, you know, I'm using an auto-tuner with it, so the radio doesn't know the difference, but I think the airways do. So.
Of course, it's only like 20 feet off the ground, too.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Those are ham sticks on the bottom there?
Kind of like a bunch of coils. Some of them are ground planes. Depending on which band, they use the different elements.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess you'd say maybe similar to a ham stick, but they're much shorter And it's just a bunch of different ones for each band.
I'm going to tune it this next time.
Let's do that.
I want to say we did. Me and Glenn spent some time tuning ours 1 year. But after that, I mean, we use it in the field all the time.
Well, this one's never been tuned. So, period. We're not the only ones that had field day this year. We'll come back and talk about that some more. Email, you did... You tried to do field day down there. Do you have a video?
W5SLA held its annual field day in the field at the ECC, as we call it, the Emergency Communications Center, which they do allow us to classify as a Foxtrot station or EOC. The AWRL recognizes us. So there in that top picture, you can see us making a plan. Glenn's behind the scenes there, behind Larry, putting some things together, and got the Elmers, and the guy sitting down to the right there is getting ready to do some test sessions with people out in his RV, which you'll see a little bit later on. Matt was showing us some pretty cool stuff about the handheld. You know, a lot of radios are coming with a good KISS TNC built into them now, and really? Bluetooth. So he had his Apple devices Bluetooth to a handy talkie hitting our TNC, or his internal TNC, hitting our local digipeater, doing packet right there from a, you know, two pieces of equipment, and you got it. I thought that was pretty neat. He was showing us some stuff that he came up with. You know, before field day starts for 1 p.m. for us in Central, so we always spend time getting the station, the club's ECC station there. You can see we have on the left, that's a digital or a packet VHF UHF station using the old 897, I think it's 897D, Kenwood TF 2000, and our old faithful, the ICOM Pro 3, still kicking, man. That radio, and it's a great, that's one of the greatest receivers I've ever heard. It's so quiet, so good, especially on that beam. All that equipment still kicking. You got to love it. But we always spend time, right, getting it all to work before it starts. And that's what we were doing here. And scroll down there. You'll see the first picture there. There's the RV where they do the testing.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yep. Yeah. Nice and air-conditioned in there. They park it along the that's the U.S. Marshals building in the back in the courthouse. So we always use their parking lot for that. And if you scroll down a little more, there's an antenna there with one of those ground plane blankets. That's an ATAS antenna that we were using.
I thought that's on one of our was, yeah.
Yep, with some blanket ground plane there. And probably some... There's Glenn doing his thing. I don't know if that was the educational part or not, but... I got something in there. And then another one. Let's see what else we got in there. And there's, I don't know if y'all remember the Boda Poda, but Mike, yeah. That's Mike taking the station for a ride on the beam. Hmm. I don't know if we hit you guys or not. I don't think we did in the logs this year.
I don't think so.
I didn't hear anybody.
Mm-mm. Yep. And then that's me. And yep, we all took it for a good ride. And we're following the gray line at some point. And that might be some, that might be the educational stuff. Maybe Glenn's showing somebody some things there. And us doing some of the emergency go kits we have there. I think that's mine, my Yaesu. And the batteries and the solar chargers.
Cheap old kit.
You know, yeah, nothing's cheap about that kit. And, you know, we did have to stay inside most of the time here. We were getting hit with some pretty hellacious lightning at the time. So that was always fun. It kept us inside, which was good for the heat. Yeah, that's just a closer. You guys seen that one. In fact, we have the episode where I built it and designed it. So
you're right. Nothing cheap about that.
No. And there's Mike with, I forget what that is. Chameleon. One of his antennas he brought with him. It was an awesome loop. Very narrow banded, but still awesome. He's got some equipment, and he has so much fun with that. Him and his brother really do some good stuff with their equipment. I remember the first day. To me, this is still what field day is all about, but I remember the first day they came in as technicians, just totally, when they got in front of that HF, that ICOM station with the beam, totally hooked. They haven't looked back since.
You can see it in their eyes, can't you, when that yes. happens. We've got more field day and other stuff coming up that you don't want to miss. Hang around just a minute. Let's get a quick message and stretch our legs. We'll be right back.
Fun, sun, and QSO. Wherever you go, keep the fun going with one of ICOM's go-to rigs. As the days get longer and the bands heat up, make sure you're ready with a radio that works as hard as you do. So kick back and enjoy the breeze and make those QSOs with ease. Remote ready, contest capable, and built for Sirius Signal, step into the future of amateur radio with ICOM's powerhouse trio, the IC7760 HF digital transceiver, the ICPW2 1 kilowatt HF 50 megahertz linear amplifier, and the all-new RC7760 remote controller. Designed to work in perfect harmony, this system offers full remote operation, high output power, and seamless integration across the bands. The RC7760 remote controller serves as an extra control head, and up to 5 can be registered to the RF deck, though only 1 can be active at a time. For wireless connectivity, simply connect a commercially available Wi-Fi access point via the LAN port. Whether you're working from the shack, the field, or a remote site, you'll experience crystal clear audio, digital precision, and amplifier-grade power, all from a single, unified interface. It's the ideal setup for contesters, MCOM operators, and high-demand users who expect more from their gear. The IC7300 combines intuitive touchscreen control, real-time spectrum display, and superior signal purity into one compact rig. Built for satellite, EME, and weak signal enthusiasts, the IC9700 combines all-mode operation on VHF, UHF, and 1.2 GHz. The IC2730A now features a high-contrast black display. It offers everything operators love: true dual-band operation, independent control knobs, and optional Bluetooth compatibility for hands-free operation. The IC718 is a favorite among new hams and portable operators, offering simple operation, rugged construction, and clean audio with DSP filtering. For more information about all of ICOM's great amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today.
So whose idea was it to put that display in dark mode? I'm going to have to get me one of them.
I don't know, but actually, we have one sitting in a box down here that has not been opened yet that we're going to be doing a video on.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
If you put the two side by side, I guarantee you just about everybody's going to choose the dark mode one. That really, really looks good in person. It looks great.
This was kind of a last minute thing because my other attempt at a segment, I kind of had to abort it. So it was a mad fury to get this one done. And it turns out this segment contains probably the most slides and audio clips that I've done in a segment, at least lately anyway. But anyway, enough of that. I decided that I would give this a try. Now, you probably heard news about Microsoft saying that they were going to do something. They were going to relax the requirements for the trusted platform module for those people that wanted to upgrade to Windows 11 and couldn't because it required a TPM 2.0. But I didn't hear a lot of fanfare about it, but apparently it's been out for a while, and I gave it a shot.
Windows 11 upgrade on TPM 1.2. I had a bunch of these Windows 10 notebooks, and they're a little long in the tooth, but they're not overly slow or sluggish. The specs are pretty good still. They have a solid-state drive, 256 gigabytes, 8 gigs of RAM, and a Core i5 5th Gen. So I didn't see any reason why it shouldn't be able to run Windows 11, except for it lacked the probably the same thing that stops everybody from upgrading to 11, and that is it doesn't have a TPM module of 2.0. It only has a TPM 1.2. Everywhere you read regarding Windows 11, it states that you must have a Trusted Platform Module 2.0. Like a lot of you out there, I don't have a Trusted Platform Module version 2.0. I have a Trusted Platform Module 1.2. So let's see if we can coax Windows 11 into installing. An internet search revealed several ways or several methods that you can install Windows 11 without having a Trusted Platform or TPM Module 2.0. One of them was Tom's Hardware. The other was PC Magazine, offered several different methods in doing this. My first attempt failed. I tried to modify the registry in Windows 10, but I received this PC does not meet the minimum system requirements to install Windows 11. So I was back to the drawing board. I stumbled across this article on PC Magazine. It talks about Microsoft offering a TPM 2.0 bypass to install Windows 11 on an unsupported PC. However, there are a few caveats and requirements. At least true dual-core 64-bit CPU at 1 GHz is required as a minimum, and a minimum of 4 gigs of RAM, a minimum of a 64-gig hard drive, 720p resolution or higher, 9-inch or higher monitor with DirectX 12 compatible graphics card, or WDDM 2.0 driver. Trusted Platform Module TPM 1.2 is required and enabled in BIOS, UEFI Secure Boot enabled in BIOS, and there appears to be no in-place upgrade option, only a fresh install. We're going to need a USB memory stick for this installation so that we can install the installation media directly onto it, and we're going to boot from this device also. So we're going to head to the Microsoft site and download the installation media. Clicking on the direct link should start a file download called mediacreationtool.exe. When this file finishes downloading, you can click on it and follow the instructions for creating the bootable USB stick. Once we have our bootable USB stick created, we can then go to our laptop or computer that we want to install Windows 11 on and enter the BIOS setup. We need to check to make sure our TPM module is enabled. So you can usually find this under the security submenu in your BIOS settings. One last note, you'll have to ensure that your BIOS is currently set for UEFI and not legacy, otherwise the installation won't work. Caution, should you need to change this setting, please note that your drive will no longer be bootable until the installation is completed with the Windows 11 update. Go ahead and insert that USB stick that we created the installation media onto. We'll have to set our BIOS to do a one-time boot, so it boots from the USB port rather than the internal hard drive. You should see a menu similar to this, requesting you to select which device you wish to boot from. In our case, it's the USB stick. Windows 11 setup should bring you to a page similar to this. In this case, this is the language settings, and you need to specify which language you wish to install, and also the time and currency format. You can select them from the drop-down list boxes and click Next to continue. Select your keyboard or input method. This is your last chance to bail out. Selecting the Install Windows 11 radio button and checking the checkbox, I agree to everything. Once you click that Next button, it's too late. It's going to start and everything is going to be gone, and you'll be left with, hopefully, a fresh install of Windows 11. Enter a Windows 11 product key here, or if you don't have one, just click the I don't have a product key button. Either way, you'll have a chance to add it later if you don't add it now. So go ahead and click Next after making your selection. Choose from the list for the desired Windows 11 version that you wish to install. I recommend you install the Pro version. Okay, time to sign your life away. If you want Windows 11, you don't really have a choice but to accept. Next, you'll see a partition management screen with all the disk partitions that you're going to be installing onto. Basically, you're going to see existing partitions there for disk 0, which basically hold any operating system that you happen to have on the computer presently. We're going to delete all of those partitions, and be sure not to delete disk 1 because that partition is your USB stick that you're booting for the install. Go ahead and delete those. You don't need to actually format them or extend them. It's going to do it automatically for you, as you'll see on the next slide. You can see now that our disk 0 partitions are deleted and consolidated as unallocated space in one big partition. A reminder of what version of Windows you're going to be installing, and also a disclaimer there that it's keeping nothing. The Windows 11 installation process has begun. During the installation process, you'll see screens confirming your choices for the installation, and this is your opportunity to change them if needed. In my particular case, I did not have a wired Ethernet connection for connection to the internet, so I needed to set up for Wi-Fi instead. During the installation process, it will check for updates. You will be prompted to name your computer. This is optional. You can name it later if you wish. Be sure to select personal use. Otherwise, you will be required to connect to a domain controller. Your update is in progress. Oh, look, advertisements. At one point during the installation process, you will be prompted to enter in a PIN. Like all other large companies these days, Microsoft likes to collect metadata, which is your personal habits, so to speak. I generally try to opt out of everything I can, unless it's absolutely necessary. But some of these options you may find useful, so I'll leave it up to you whether or not you want to opt in or out. And you can decide for yourself, but I generally say no to everything except for stuff that I have to. I did not expect this. During the installation process, I was prompted to log in with a Microsoft account, which I had because I use Skype and now Teams. So you have to have a Microsoft account for that. So I entered that information in. It looks like during the installation process, it restored a backup from the last time. I don't even recall creating a backup, but it pulled it out of the cloud somewhere and set things up like folders, app settings, and credentials automatically. So even though I started with a fresh, clean install of Windows 11, it brought back some of my personalized files from my Microsoft account. Okay, it looks like the installation is finished. But part of the completion and cleanup process is setting up default settings for you, and it's doing that now. We finally arrived at our Windows 11 desktop. You would think during the installation process it would have brought all the up-to-date files over with it, but no, you have to run Windows Update, and it will find additional files that need to be updated. So go ahead and download and install these. That's about it. You can see that we're running Windows 11 now, Professional Edition. There's a little bit more information regarding the OS build. You'll note that the product key is not activated because we skipped that during the installation process, but I highly recommend you get one. Otherwise, there are certain features in Windows 11 that you won't be able to make changes to, for example, regarding the display preferences and the personalization, things like that. But for the most part, it's operational. You can use it. You'll get the nag screen, as you can see here, that Windows is not activated. Congratulations, you have now saved another piece of electronic hardware from the electronic waste. 7.3 from VE3MIC.
Well, that's pretty cool, Mike.
Yeah. So
yeah, I was actually surprised there wasn't more fanfare about that. And as a little experiment, I thought, well, how the heck did it say my TPN 1.2 was okay? Because when I downloaded that Windows 11 upgrade, it didn't mention that there was a special hacked version of it, or, you know, for TPM 1.2 users. So after the installation, I went into the registry and I looked for that registry key in one of the other methods for doing a Windows 11 install on it, and it didn't exist. So I'm kind of puzzled as to how it did it, unless the registry is slightly different in Windows 11 from Windows 10. I don't know.
So let me ask, I mean, you did not download a special image, you just downloaded a Windows 11 Pro image and it just worked?
Well, the image I downloaded, you could see there was a drop-down list box, so it supported the multiple versions of Windows. I could install Home. Install the end versions, which don't include a web browser. But there was nothing specific on the website where I downloaded it from that said this was a special install for TPM 1.2 users. I'm a little puzzled about that.
So what about the supported CPU? Because like this computer I'm on right now, this Yogurt as I call it, is excuse me, it's got a TPM 2.0 module, but it's got a 7th gen i7.
Okay.
And it's not supported. But last time I tried to run the update checker, it said it wouldn't work.
Really? I mean, that's a 64-bit CPU, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's got, what, 8 cores in it?
It's I think it's 4 cores in this one. This is a little Yoga, tiny little laptop.
Okay. But still, you only need a minimum of 2 cores, and it needs to be a 64-bit processor. And it has to be at least 1 gig. Well, that i7 is well over that mark. So I'm not sure why it squawked at you.
I wonder if it's the difference between doing an update and doing an install.
Maybe.
Because you did an install, you didn't do an update.
I did an install because I was surprised there was no option to do an in-place upgrade in this case. So normally I've done that in the past where I've taken a Windows 10 machine that had a TPM 2.0. Especially when they were given the free upgrades away, I updated all my Windows 10 machines that were capable of Windows 11, doing an in-place upgrade, and it retained all of my files and programs and things. But this one didn't give me that option to do that.
It's
tempting to try it, but I kind of hate to wipe out everything on here because this is my ham computer. It's got all my
image
first.
You could back it up, and you could certainly back it up to the cloud because.
Well, I got USB drives.
As much as I hate to do that, it pulled the backup out of my Microsoft account and applied it right after the install was done. So yeah,
that must come off your OneDrive.
You could try the other options, and if there's a link there that I put to in that PC Magazine site, and it talks about two other different methods for doing it. One uses Rufus, and another one uses something else for creating a bootable media. And those ones, for sure, don't care about the CPU. I mean, this is the other thing, too. In your case, Tommy, I don't know what went wrong, but it should have met all the requirements.
Well, it's not listed on the CPUs that are supported, which doesn't make any sense to me because the computer's plenty fast enough.
Well, that's just it, and that's why I didn't try anything older because I thought, well, what's the point if the machine is sluggish running Windows 7? I'm certainly not going to try to upgrade it to Windows 11 and think that it's going to run okay.
So have you run this one enough to know what the performance seems to be like?
Yeah, I would say the performance it certainly boots faster than Windows 10. Of course, that was one of the selling features behind 11. It boots up pretty quickly. I would say performance-wise, I didn't notice any difference between it and Windows 10.
Interesting. Well, I've got two Windows 10 machines left, and one of them I'm pretty sure doesn't have TPM at all in it. And the other one, I think it had a socket on the motherboard, but nothing plugged into it, and you can't find the module now. So I think I don't know that I'll be able to do that without trying some of the other methods.
Yeah, like in that chart on one of the slides in the segment there, it noted that TPM 1.2, I think, was available back as far as 2011. So,
yeah, blue screen.
Blue screen. Is that Windows 95 or Windows XP era blue screen?
I don't know.
I was going to say, you might be wearing a piece of history there, because I've heard they got rid of that.
No, I've seen a blue screen, I think.
A Windows 10?
11.
I haven't seen a Windows blue screen.
I've seen it on Windows 10, but it basically has a blue screen, and all it says on it is Windows encountered problem and it needs to restart.
Yeah, but it doesn't have all that cool
stuff.
No,
it doesn't have all that data on it, no.
Well, all right, well, thanks for doing that, Mike. You've piqued my interest. I knew that there were ways around it out there. I just haven't been willing to try. I don't know.
Linux sounds pretty good. I've got two that don't have TPM modules at all, which are probably going to end up with Windows with the Linux on it one day.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame.
Do any of the Linux? Do any of the Linux distributions care about trusted platform modules?
Not that I know of.
I don't know.
I mean, if you looked at that chart on one of the slides, TPM 2.0 is a lot more. It's like the difference between WEP and WPA2, I think, in terms of security. The encryption keys are a lot stronger. So obviously, you know, it's more robust, but how much more robust do we really need? I don't know anybody that's been able to hack WPA easily.
Tom is saying Microsoft recently announced that the blue screen of death has gone away. And he thinks that the new one will be a black background, and they're calling it unplanned restart.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Plenty of unplanned restarts.
We put up antennas a while ago.
We did.
What do you say we wrap that up?
Okay.
Now it's well.
The new station is pretty much the old station with one change. So,
one major change.
I'm using the same gamer headsets I've used the last couple of years. I've built an adapter cable that fits into this IC7760.
Ooh.
Brand new rig from Icom. First opportunity to play with it, doing actually something meaningful. So, operated field day on it this year. It is very nice. I can say I can find signals that are just barely in the waterfall, and I'm able to hear them. And it's 200-watt radio. Of course, only run 100 watts for the contest. It's got all the bells and whistles. The radio itself, of course, is this big box right here. It's a radio and a power supply built in one. And then the control head connects by Cat5 direct to the radio. Or
tuner in there too, isn't it?
There's a tuner in there. Power supply. I think I probably already said that. Two speakers that sound pretty decent because there are two receivers in here. You can have two band scopes at the same time if you want to do that for your two receivers. You got this extra little display over here that shows various other things. So.
Cool.
I've learned my way around it. I kind of am familiar with Icom radios. This one I just sat down and started using. There are a few things I had to look in the book for, but the majority of it, I just instinctively knew how to use it because I Been using Rycom radios for years.
They're pretty consistent on the interface.
They are. And it's basically touchscreen for most everything. That operates fine. One interesting thing I have not seen on another radio that I saw on this one is the knob right here that's normally like your RF gain or a squelch is both. If you turn it this way, it is a squelch. If you turn it clockwise, if you turn it counterclockwise, it turns into RF gain, RFG right there. And then you can, you know, turn it down to get your noise level a little lower, but still be able to hear signals. So that one knob acts two different functions. On my IC7700, that's two different knobs. Here they've been able to put both of those functions into a single knob, keep the size down. N1MM, same software we've used for the last few years on one laptop. Over here, older laptop, FT8, got about 48 QSOs on there. It worked pretty well. Of course, in the background here is Ham Radio Deluxe, an old version of it. That's because FT8 won't talk directly to this FT857D that I'm using. This is my first HF radio. Been using it for FT8 here and last year at Field Day, but that's about all I really ever use that radio anymore. Last year I had to have Ham Radio Deluxe so I could see what frequency I was on. The display was trashed in it. It's full of lines. You couldn't really read it. I found a place this past year where I could buy another display. I don't remember the price right off, but I did an episode on it where I changed that out. So it's not the exact original display, but it's close enough that it does the job, and it did restore the radio again where you can operate it without having to have something else for a heads-up display. I still had to run Ham Radio Deluxe because that's what keys the radio through cat commands. Old LDG tuner. We use some of these filters again like we always use. We got one for 7 megahertz, 14 megahertz,
and 21.
And the rest of this stuff is just incidentals, wires, and stuff that you need. Power supply I didn't use here, but this is a 12-volt power supply, same one I've used for several years. This is a EcoFlow battery. Now, I don't remember what my output was on this one. It's a fair size. Similar,
it's over KW, I remember that.
Yeah, similar to Tommy's that he's running over there, different brand. You've got what, the
Blue Eddy,
yeah. I started out running on this one because this rig is 110 volts. It does not have a 12-volt input because 200-watt rig, you can't really run a 200-watt rig off a 12-volt power supply that I know of. If you did, it would be a heap of amps. So ICOM, in their big rigs like this, power supply is built in. So I had to use the inverter that's in this EcoFlow battery. Plugged it in. It was working. I was making a few contacts. But I was thinking, man, this new IC7760 is just not doing the job. The receiver is just is bad in here because I'm hearing CW splatter all up here in the single sideband area. And I shouldn't be hearing CW that far away. And it's just tearing me up. I can't hear the sideband signals. It did sound like CW. Except I got to noticing whoever it was, it must have been somebody just learning it because they were sending it very slow. And their rate was a little erratic. And Tommy said, why don't you try not using the inverter in here. See if that's it. Maybe that's it. Sure enough, it was. So the radio was great, but the inverter in this EcoFlow was noisy.
Not so good for that task.
It wasn't good for 14 megahertz. Might have worked on some other bands. I don't know, though. It'd be good for other tasks, but not for running your radio. Tell me, what have you got over here?
All right, for my station this time, I still use my 705. I was going to bring my 7100, and I had a problem at work, and I just didn't get time to unhook it before we needed to come out. And I mostly ran 20 meters, I think. Yeah, 20 meters, and some 15. I had a little bit of a problem, though. I was kind of wondering if something was wrong with my radio or whatever, but something was wrong with me. I wasn't making contacts. I was having a real hard time, and I come to find out that I had bumped this Ritz at some point, maybe last field day. I don't know if I used this radio much since then. It was 800 hertz off, so as people were hearing me 800 hertz off of where they were transmitting from, because I was tuning into what I could hear. I noticed a lot of people weren't right on the dot on the frequency, too, so anyway.
You were like operating split that far off.
I feel kind of dumb, but I'll fess up and face the music for it. So.
But it improved your performance tremendously.
Yeah, like 1,000%. This morning when I came in here after doing that, it pretty much almost everybody I heard, I called back and they answered. Mm-hmm. So, no problem after that. So you got the N1MM software, same laptop. I'm using a Bluetooth headset again this time. And my AH705 tuner. And for as far as the power, that's my other battery. You use this one. It's actually lasted the whole field day for your FT8 rig.
Yeah.
So I've got a new AC180 Fluetti rig there, and I still got 82% battery on it, and it's been running for 2 days with the 705. It's 1,152 watt hours. So it's almost 1.2 kW.
Cool.
That's mostly it for mine. As far as the this Bluetooth thing here, I did use that for my receive and transmit. So I've ordered your headphones because I forgot to get mine. But I've kind of forgot about it before, but you can actually plug a real set of headphones into this thing. And it's a lot more comfortable. It sounds much better, too.
And you could also walk around and do QSOs.
Yeah, I made contact over there while I was fixing the sandwich earlier today. But anyway, I tried a little FT8, and first when I had the RIT was off kilter on my radio, couldn't receive anything. It was kind of freaking me out, so that's when we got to checking. And I didn't make any contacts this morning on it. I tried a few times. I might have to go debug that before next field day and see what's going on with it. Maybe have the transmit audio level need to be adjusted or something in there. Not sure. We'll figure it out.
So, overall, good field day?
Yeah, it was fun. It was hot outside.
Yeah, that's...
But we had the showers again, so that redeemed it.
Yeah.
But, it's been a great field day.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Well, we got a lot of antennas to tear down now.
Yeah. That's not so fun.
No.
So, anyway, 73, we'll see you guys next time.
73. Oh, here. Right here. There's the casualty.
Yeah. Got popped in the gourd by a wasp.
Yeah.
Yes. The only wasp for all of field day, and it found me.
Right on the noggin.
Yep.
I almost cut out that part about the RIT being off, but I figured maybe it might help somebody.
It would.
That was pretty pretty neat idea about having the combined squelch and RF gain.
Yeah.
Control.
Yeah.
I wonder how they pulled that. Obviously, the squelch and RF gain are software controlled somehow.
Well.
Behind the scenes, it must be because.
Well, it's SDR. Yeah, I guess it'd have to be, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty
but,
sweet radio.
Interesting.
Very sweet radio, and we've still got it here. We're going to be shooting some more video on it, some real video.
Some more detailed stuff.
Us taking it out and using it, and it worked great.
It was a shame not to take it for field day. It was just sitting here.
Well, yeah. But it is a little big to be hauling around a field day.
At least we didn't have it out in the tent in the weather and the rain.
No, we didn't do that.
had in the brick and mortar tent.
But we've got a video be coming up real soon. Not sure if it'll be on Amateur Logic or if it'll be on the ICOM America YouTube page, but we're going to be taking advantage of some of the unique features that you've got on that radio, like, you know, the head is separate from the body of the rig, and there's a Cat 5 cable, or probably a Cat 6 between the two. But you can also put it on your local area network. We're going to do a video showing that. And now, with the latest firmware update on that rig, you can do it over the internet.
Awesome.
So we're going to try that out as well and see about going out over the worldwide webs and just take the head with you and go. And so I'm assuming if you were very creative, because the head runs off 15 volts DC. Mm-hmm. It comes with a little wall wart that powers the head. So if you've got a car that'll do 12 volt, you can probably come up with 15 volts from that. And you could be riding down the road with that really nice radio right there with the body sitting at home connected up to an amplifier and tri-bander or dipole or whatever. And
7760 mobile?
Yep, 7760 mobile.
Pretty awesome.
But with a base station performance. But now, I'm looking forward to trying all those things, because that's really got me interested in that radio, is remote capabilities.
You could really light them up with parks on the air with that.
You could, you know. I thought about that for field day, but, you know, field day, all your antennas got to be within, what, 1,000 feet?
Yeah, I think parks on the air thing, you got to set your antenna up out there. It's got to be in the park.
Oh, you can't run it from a 100-foot tower at all. Yeah, that would make sense. Well, Tommy, field day was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
It was. It was a great time.
Eventually, you got to go home.
Yep. So I had a little journey this time.
Yeah, you did.
Well, Tommy, it's been a fun field day.
Yeah, it has. I'm fixing to head on to the house.
All right. How far is it? About 40 miles, 50 miles?
Yeah, it takes about, on the interstate, it takes about 45 minutes. But I'm going through the back way this time, so it might take me a couple days.
Okay.
Next year.
All right.
The radio.
7-3.
So did you make it home before dark?
Yeah. Before the dark Sunday.
Okay.
Monday, rather.
Well, that cameraman's kind of shaky, isn't he? There he goes. And that's the last time we ever saw Tommy.
Bigfoot got him.
Still wandering around in the woods.
Yeah. That was
mobile.
Yeah. Fun times.
Yeah, it was great. It's always fun. And the tearing down is actually easier than the setup to me.
Well, yeah, it always goes faster.
Mm-hmm. That cobweb comes down pretty easy. But raising that thing up is pretty tough.
It comes out a lot quicker than it went up, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Always does. Not as fast as it did a couple of years ago, though.
Oh, when it fell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fell and broke the tip of the mast.
Yeah. A couple of the wires, but hey.
That thing's pretty tough, though. It doesn't look like it, but it is.
Yeah. It's been patched on a little bit now after that incident. Yeah. But
it's a good little antenna.
It's a good antenna. Mike, you found a, I don't know, would you call this stereophonic? What would you call this that you found?
Well, it's not really stereophonic because it allows two individuals to watch two different channels at the same time. So in 1945, the prototype, Dumont, retrofitted a maple-finished cabinet that originally held a 15-inch Plymouth TV receiver to house two black-and-white 12-inch receivers. Separate audio could be played with or without earpieces. Viewers used a 10-turn dial to tune into TV Channel 1, which went off the air in 1948, in VHF Channels 2 through 13. As radio was still much more popular than television, the dial also included FM from 88 to 108 megahertz, plus a few channels used for weather and aviation. The lower left drawer held a phonograph. It was an all-in-one entertainment center.
You know, that's interesting. You said that was 1938.
It says 45 on there.
Okay, one place says 38. And prototype shown at the top. Okay, the cathode ray tubes were 1938.
Yeah, I guess it was a company that manufactured cathode ray tubes.
Yeah. Well, where I was going at is in back in 1938, I think FM was still on a much lower band. You know, it wasn't from 88 megahertz to 108.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the very very first version. But
I'm actually surprised that it had an FM tuner in there.
Yeah.
At that year.
I am, too. That's very early for FM. But that would have been the same band we got now. Look at that speaker, though, man. That's at least a 12-inch.
Yeah,
I've,
on the
never,
bottom right.
Speaker's bigger than
I've never seen anything like that before.
No.
Speaker's bigger
obviously
than the speaker.
Obviously, it didn't become very popular.
I just wonder how it would be listening to two different programs at the same time.
Maddening.
Well, it said you could use separate earpieces or not, but
yeah.
Can you imagine having the audio mixed through that one speaker? That would kind of, well, your hearing is a pretty good filter.
Well, whoever had this before must not have liked having two at once because the knobs are all gone on the left side.
Yeah.
That solved that problem. That's view only side.
And I was trying to figure out what they wrote on the screen there. Looks like it with a Sharpie.
Yeah.
Interesting article I found. And again, I've never heard of such an animal.
No, me neither. That's a new one. I mean, I remember the old stereo Viewmasters, but never stereo television. Well, of visually stereo.
I'm just reading more. You'll have to read the article because it says in 1954, Dumont introduced a different approach with two different channels were broadcasted on a single screen. And it obviously used different polarizations. And you wore glasses, and you only saw the one image at a time, depending on what pair of glasses you put on, I guess.
Wow.
Ooh, all right.
That's pretty wild.
Professor, you're learning me something.
Yeah?
What do you mean FM wasn't on 88 to 108 originally?
Oh, you didn't know that. You know, the first time I ever run across that is... down at my grandfather Thomas's house. He died when I was real young. But there was an old FM antenna, an S. You have ever seen those S-shaped FM omnidirectional antennas? There was one of those down there, and there was an FM radio receiver, an old, looked like Bakelite cabinet. But it only picked up FM. And so I got that and took it to our house and hooked it up and never heard a thing on it. It was on a different portion, 42 to 50.
Yeah, megahertz. 6 meters, huh?
Yeah, 6 meters, yes.
Baby monitor.
The band. Frequency band was changed to the current 88 to 108 band in 1946. So, wow. I guess Dumont was projecting into the future because that was a year before we broadcast from 88 to 108.
They wanted to be early adopters.
Yeah.
Interesting.
FM stations operating on the old frequency band were required to move to higher frequencies, and most did so before 1948.
Hey, kids, you never know what you're going to learn.
Nope. That, you know, just listen to the old guys. I don't ever remember hearing anything down there. Well, I wouldn't have because I wasn't born. But yeah, I have something that came from a YouTube comment here, and I don't have a picture to go with it. I should have tried to get
one. Can we draw one?
You can. Do you know what we're going to do?
It's charades.
No idea.
Yeah. This came, well, from the last episode of Amateur Logic. We got a comment from Turtle Waxed.
Okay.
And we were talking about the battery management board for laptops.
Yeah.
Remember that little failed experiment that I had there? He said most of those BM boards and laptop batteries are designed to wipe the programming or disable the BMS/charger if the power to the BMS is disconnected or drops below a low limit point. Once that happens, it won't work anymore. It's a cheap way to force people to buy new battery packs instead of being able to DIY repair them. Great video on the misadventures of repairing battery packs. Thank you. A suggestion for future videos would be how to DIY a BMS and make your own battery for ham radio using old laptop batteries. I think somebody here kind of maybe had that thought.
I did. I bought a battery box off of, I think it was Timu, and I cracked open a bunch of old laptop batteries. The old ones didn't have the solid-state lithium ion. They used actual 18650 cells, so I was able to hook them all up and find good ones, because usually there's only one bad cell in a pack. But that'll prevent the actual pack from working properly in the laptop. So you get rid of the bad ones and you put all the good ones together and you can build yourself a decent battery pack.
Yeah. Well, I have plenty of them. I've got
plenty of batteries.
Six new ones and six old ones that some of the old ones are probably still good then.
Yeah, I need to bring my battery pack.
Yeah.
Charger over here and drop it off, let you test them.
I would like to.
I'll try to think of bringing it next time I come.
Okay.
Well, one of the XR ones?
Yeah, X-Star.
X-Star, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it for tonight. Fun show?
Yeah, it's fun.
Field day is always fun, too. If you didn't do it this year, certain people who might be associated with this show or watching, you need to try to do Field Day. It's a once in a year type of event.
Once in a year.
And it's not a contest.
And yours truly hasn't done it in 2 years.
Yeah. But it's
you have to experience it.
Yeah,
it needs to be on your bucket list.
It's as close as I come to contesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's bragging rights in the end. They publish the results. So.
Yeah.
But I'm in it for the fun.
Me too. Yeah. Me too, yeah, Mike. That's all I'm care. Well, I care about.
We want to do, you know, as good as we can do, and try to learn something. Maybe do better the next time. But, you know, try different antennas or whatever. You know, just try to learn from it. And
I had learning experience this time.
You did. You learned a lot. We all did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To push the limits. I like it because the point structures will make you learn something you didn't know or push your limits to the limit.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that operate field day from home, and I thought about that in years past. Well, you know, they didn't really get out and sweat or get stung or anything.
Thing. Yeah. I've done it. I've operated, what's a class? One yeah. Delta, I think. And only purpose was to give some contacts to the guys that were actually out in the field doing it.
And that was my point. Those people who are operating at home are giving the people who are out and setting up in a parking lot at a shopping center or something.
That's right.
Somebody to talk to.
Somebody to talk to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you suggesting that bee stings and ant stings should be points?
There should be extra points. I'm going to talk with our safety officer and see if we can get something extra.
Yeah.
He didn't have any chewing tobacco to chew up so I could, you know, put on the sting. But
you gave that up.
I have an issue with the points in field day because 2 years ago I operated QRP with 10 watts, and boy, oh boy, it was a lot of work getting those contacts, I'll tell you, compared to everybody else that was running 100.
Well.
And I always thought the multiplier should be higher for QRP, but oh well.
Well, imagine if you were only running 10 watts and you were listening 800 hertz off, or you were transmitting 800 hertz off. Once he got that thing on, and I'll fess up too, when he found out FT8, things just weren't looking right on it. And I looked at my radio and I said, it's like you're on a different frequency because I'm seeing what you're seeing, but it's on a different frequency. And I looked at his radio too and I didn't notice.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost kind of hidden when you look down, it's right under the knob.
Yeah. There's a little RIT button there.
Yeah. There's another setting for the transmitter to toss at the transmitter. Yeah. XIT, yeah.
Yeah.
RIT NIXT.
Yeah. Those, I think it had one of those, too.
It likely does.
It probably does.
Yeah.
That's where that ICOM, all the ICOMs shine, man. The twin TBT, the passband stop, and the RIT and the exit, man.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that passband tuning, man, that's on something like field day. There's a lot of frequencies you just couldn't operate on otherwise, but you can tune in those folks with those knobs, man, get all those people on the side out of there. And
yeah,
my old rig, when I say old, I mean 80s vintage. Surprisingly, it's a Yaesu, but it for some reason it didn't have passband tuning on it. It only had IF shift. That's the only thing it had. It didn't have RIT.
That's what the Kenwoods and all had as well.
But the passband tuning is much better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, before we get out of here for tonight, any final thoughts, Tommy?
No thoughts whatsoever. Supper time.
He's a blank slate. I'm still stuck in a reboot loop over here. So I hope.
One thing I didn't mention about the Windows license, I didn't put it in the segment, but when I built a desktop about a year and a half ago, And of course, I had to get a Windows license for it. So I actually went online and ordered a license for Windows 11. And I think I paid like $14 for it. Now, they claim that the licenses that they sell to you are ones that they've recovered off of laptops that were turned in on a lease or something like that. So allegedly they say that. But anyway, this license that I've had on the desktop, and it's actually the one I'm using right now, it's been running flawlessly. It gets updates and no issues at all.
Well,
for $14.
I had seen those ads, and, you know, to me, just, yeah, you can't get a license for $14. Something's fishy here. I didn't see the fine print, though. Well, Emil, any final thoughts from down there?
It was a pleasure to be the main slacker this go-around and prior go-around and future go-around.
Yeah, how does that happen other time?
It always seems like you're the slacker for some reason.
Yeah, it does.
Every other time. Yeah, I think he's been manipulating the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me go check the spreadsheet again.
Yeah, the system is rigged. Huh?
Keep it cheap.
Is he even allowed to say that anymore, Tony?
You know what? I kind of came up with that tagline for him, several years ago, but at this stage of the game, I don't think it really applies anymore.
Yeah,
you know what it was, Mike? Ever since you made that Fonzie jacket for me, that leather jacket, it put me in a different bracket. I'm in a different tax bracket.
Wow.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Join us back here next month, and at the end of the month, probably August the 1st, for the next Ham College. That works. And until then, keep it cool, man. It is hot out there.
It is.
Yep.
Yep.
Be careful.
7-3, everybody. Good night.
7-3.
7-3.